The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Tropical hot dog night. Like two flamingos in a fruit fight. Every color of day, whirling around at night. I'm playing this music so the young girl will come out to be the monster tonight. Tropical hot dog night. Like two flamingos in a fruit fight. I don't wanna know about wrong or right. I don't want to know. I'm anywhere tonight. Tropical hot dog night. Like two flamingos in a fruit fight. Stepping out of a triangle into strike light.
Well, hi everybody. I'm David Lefkowitz, and welcome to Dave's Gone By. It's a brand new show on WGBB. I hope you like it. It's going to be something a little different. It's going to be something that pops the peas a little bit in the microphone, something that rattles the table, something that I don't think it will break a few things, but the idea is just to have something a little bit different from everything else on the AM and FM dial. Well, not 100% different. There are some shows, I guess, that you could say were influences on what we're trying to do here, like Incorrect Music or Dr. Demento or Idiot's Delight or Glenn Jones on radio station WFMU. It's a mix of all that, of comedy, talk, music, weird stuff, fun stuff. I hope you you listen in. I hope you like it. Why am I doing it? Because I love radio. I have pretty much all my life. I like the variety. I like the intimacy, the sharing of music and thoughts. And as I said, the show is a mix of everything. It may fall into a pattern at some point, but I'm going to try and keep it fairly loose and fairly free, hopefully with a lot of the emphasis on humor. And I don't anticipate really offending anybody, but at the same time, this is not for the kids. This is not a show you're going to see on Saturday morning TV. The idea here is to express things fairly freely as long as we don't make the FCC mad. Hope we can do that. I'll probably wind up with 14 listeners, but they will be fans. Anyway, what's going to be on this show, we're going to have, aside from musical selections from people like Neil Young and Husker Du and The Human Horn, more on that anon. We also have a segment called The World Weird Web. We have a couple of theater reviews. We have the Puff Sullivan letter. Lots of different things. Anyway, let's go right to our first segment, which is called News Gone By, kind of apropos for Dave's Gone By, just to look at some of the items and events that have been happening in the past week in Long Island and America. I've got to start, of course, with something local just a couple of blocks away, the Great Long Island Railroad Sexcapade, which essentially happened in Merrick. That's the home of WGBB. I know they say it's in Freeport, but technically I think it's in Merrick. Anyway, this is from the New York Post from September 22nd. Meet the Strap Bangers. Only the New York Post would start a story like that. A Long Island couple and the hubby's brother gave new meaning to riding the rails yesterday when they treated stunned commuters to a raunchy three-way sex romp on the Babylon Line of the Long Island Railroad, police said, and when ordered to uncouple, they refused. Lyle Green, his wife, and his brother boarded the 6:05 a.m. local train to at Penn Station to return home to Wantagh. They've been partying all night, and, quote, the three of them were having sex, police spokesman Tom Kelly confirmed. That aroused the ire of 25 passengers in the car. One reported it to the conductor, ordered the three to stop, and they didn't. The conductor then notified the cops, who arrested the three when the train stopped in Merrick. They were taken to the precinct station house in Baldwin and charged with public lewdness. Well, first of all, Long Island Railroad public relations should really play this up. It's the first sexy image the railroad has had since that original train going into a tunnel metaphor. And the other thing is, I just don't think the railroad wants to publicize all this because, let's face it, it's probably the first time any commuter on the LIRR ever came early. But thank you very much. In my personal opinion, though, these people deserve a wrist slap, a fine, some community service. They were wrong to do what they did in public, certainly wrong to stop when other riders asked them to, well, not to stop. But otherwise, live and let live. I think we're still so paranoid about sexual behavior in this country. I mean, you've got two radio DJs talking about a couple having sex in St. Patrick's Cathedral. They get thrown off the air. Three people fool around on a train. They make national headlines and get arrested. Meanwhile, you've got President George Bush going to the UN to foreign dignitaries on national television in prime time to say that we have to assassinate Saddam Hussein in cold blood, bomb human beings in Iraq. It's classic America, where violence is in the national character and sex is not. Now, God knows I have no love for Iraq or Iran or Saudi Arabia. Dropping a few bombs on them would not cost me any sleep. But when Bill Maher on Politically Incorrect can't speak his mind on terrorism, and when guys on the radio can't suggest making love in a church, not doing it, just talking about it, I wonder what freedoms we're actually fighting for. But on a lighter LIRR note, this is from something called the BBC Unfortunate News Service, kind of a spoof from voidingthevoid.com, www.vvoid.com. Quote, the 97th Annual Convention of Unbelievably Boring People has announced that this summer's schedule for the Long Island Railroad Babylon Branch has been voted the most exciting timetable of the year. Said Chairwoman Joanna Tarkas, quote, some trains stop at Wantagh, Belmore, and Merrick, but others skip those stops and go right to Freeport, Baldwin, and Rockville Center. No other schedule has the guts to do that. Hear, hear. Oh, and speaking of guts, from Newsday, September 28th, Albert Fentress, the former middle school teacher who tortured, killed, and ate the body parts of a Poughkeepsie high school student, lost his bid Friday to remain at Pilgrim Psychiatric Center in Brentwood. He was sent to a maximum security hospital upstate. Aww. Now, the article mentions that Fentress tortured, mutilated, cannibalized, and killed, I hope not completely in that order, Poughkeepsie High School student Paul Masters, age 18, in 1979. Fentress's attorney, Sheldon Rosen, of the Mental Hygiene Legal Service, said Fentress will appeal because, quote, he has shown no dangerous propensities whatsoever while at the Brentwood facility. Now, I think his lawyer might want to reconsider. There are some key reasons why this man might be considered mentally ill and dangerous. Number one, he ate a sophomore. Now, everybody knows high school kids are much less tasty than junior high school kids. As soon as puberty sets in, the muscles get all gristly, the organs are chewier, and any gravy you make has a really musky aftertaste. Number two, if you are going to eat a high school student, you don't torture them first, because the fear drains the blood, which is the juicy part, and tightens the limbs, making the skin very taut. And you want the flesh to flake very delicately off the bone. And finally, all the finest young cannibals use as their recipe bible Emeril's out-of-print book, BAM! You're Dead and Delicious, which features such delicacies as cheerleader a la Gacy and southern fried chicken hawk. But our next news item is about someone I don't want to see put away. It's from the New York Post, October 4th. Master monologist Spalding Gray checked into a Manhattan hospital for depression after he tried to jump off a bridge in the Hamptons. Gray, dubbed the Wasp Woody Allen, and best known for his filmed monologues Grey's Anatomy and Swimming to Cambodia, was severely depressed since he was in a horrifying head-on collision in June 2001 in Ireland. So, this one's for Spalding, hoping that he gets better. Oh, Well, the latest Spalding Gray drama unfolded at 1 o'clock on Wednesday in the afternoon when a woman called police after seeing him pacing and then leaning off the bridge that separates Sag Harbor from North Haven. Cops rushed to the scene just as Gray's manager and wife, Kathy Russo, was driving by. "Well, he's hit another low," she told the Post. "We talked him down and we all convinced him to go back to the hospital. Depression is nothing to be embarrassed about." Russo blamed the 61-year-old actor's depression on a combination of the wrong antidepressants, head trauma from the accident, and 9/11. At the very end of the article, it does say that if Gray had jumped off the bridge, 25-foot high, it's unlikely he would have been badly injured. Apparently, so many local teens used to jump off the bridge for fun, the town passed an ordinance against the practice. Well, that sounds like a cry for help more than anything else. You know, when you jump into a creek, that's swimming, not suicide. The real irony is that Gray was preparing a new monologue, no joke here, about the car accident called Black Spot that was going to play once a week at Off-Off Broadway's PS 122 through the end of the year. It is also true that Gray's own mother committed suicide when she turned 52, which had a profoundly disturbing effect on him all his life. He was indulging in a lot of suicidal fantasies when he turned 52 about a decade ago. And around that time, he played a character who commits suicide in the Steven Soderbergh film King of the Hill. I interviewed Spalding Gray back in September 2000, 3 days before the opening night of a Broadway revival of The Best Man, a political satire by Gore Vidal. I asked Gray about his process of preparing for the role, which of course led to an answer only he could give. Quote, he said, "There was one comforting thing about learning lines. It took my entire daily focus. I'm dyslexic, so one way I learn the lines is writing them on block letters on 3x5 cards. Then I would take these cards and say them to myself softly. It became like a mantra as I walked all over. That left no room for fears, hypochondria, worry about the future. Street people and tourists stayed away from me. They thought I was mad, talking to myself. But yesterday, I was in Battery Park watching the sailboats. I no longer have the mantra, and when you let go of that, up comes all the old existential anxiety. For example, one new line presented itself and stayed in my head. I believe it's a Kerouac line. Life is like a dream that never happened. I must have said that to myself for an hour. I couldn't shake it. It's a nihilistic idea. Life is like a dream that never happened. The non-happening dream. Like Prospero's last speech or the end of Hamlet. The rest is silence. Oh, and there's a pun there on the word rest. I would love to be in a silent state." End quote. Well, I don't want Spalding Gray ever in a silent state. I've seen a number of his monologues on stage and on film. Swimming to Cambodia, Monster in a Box, Grey's Anatomy, wonderful piece about his eye operation. I hope he gets better because he really is one of a kind. I've always envied him because what he did seems so easy. He didn't even have to memorize his shows. He just read the monologues from his journal at a table for 90 minutes, and it was theater, and you'd be mesmerized. I don't want this to sound like Richard Corey syndrome, but he's certainly an influence on me and on anybody doing autobiographical performance in the last 20 years. Anyway, speaking of depression, bye-bye baseball. The Yankees pooped out early in the playoffs, and the Mets, after finishing in last place during the season, fired manager Bobby Valentine, basically making him the scapegoat for a really lousy year all around. Keith Hernandez was right. They quit. They quit when they had that losing streak. They quit after that when they still could have made it to 500 or a game or two better than they did last year. They quit in the final weeks when they could have finished fourth or third or second if they played a little better because all the other division teams were bunched up way down under Atlanta. But the Mets were lazy, egotistical, disheartened, disillusioned. And Valentine was a part of that, though far from all of it. The good news is that despite low attendance at Shea the last few weeks, all the unsold hot dogs, beer, and nachos will be eaten during the offseason by Mo Vaughn. Also, to bolster their anemic offense, Mets hitters have decided not to use Major League regulation bats. Instead, they're going to roll their own. Well, that's the news gone by for the week ending October 6th. Please send in your comments, opinions, and whatnot to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. I can't guarantee a personal response, but everything will be read. Please assume that Unless otherwise requested, all comments and questions may be read on the air with or without your name. So that's davesgoneby@AOL.com or snail mail, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no anthrax. I'm allergic. Anyway, want to wish a happy birthday here to Joan Rivers, a fine comedian, or at least certainly she was in her pre-Wholesale Shopping Network, pre-Red Carpet Prime, and her birthday comes this week on October 12, 1935. Rather interesting, same exact day and date as Luciano Pavarotti. So here's a clip from her album, What Becomes a Semi-Legend Most, Miss Joan Rivers.
See, California, because California, you're from California? That's where we can talk, New York, yeah. How long are you living out here? 5 years. I'm living here, God, 9 years. I miss New York. You know why I like New York? It was tough. The city was tough. The Statue of Liberty carried a gun. I was so impressed. Oh, yes. I lived in an apartment building in the basement. We had a washer dryer with a rape cycle. Oh, yes. It was a tough city. You'd walk out, you'd see a cop frisking a horse. And the women are tough. See, here in California, the women are too late. They're too, like, the women in California are, like, too, they're scared, you know? A guy flashes you, they go to pieces. He's flashing. New York, a guy flashes you, you took your embroidery hoop, you played ring toss. Gets him 2 out of 3. Oh, Adam! See, you know what city I hate? Well, Billings, Montana. Did you ever go there? Are you going there? Don't go. Better to die in a plane crash. If you have a choice, landing in Billings and going down a plane, go down that goddamn plane. Women in high heels and socks. Have you ever been there? The 7-Eleven store is called 2-5. It's so stupid. They had a fashion show at Sears Roebuck. No models. They held open the catalog and they would point. And the women would go like... on the stage, and you want to be good, even though it's Billings, Montana, you want to be hot. You know, I come on the stage, and I look down where you're sitting. There was a woman nursing a child. Look at this group. Well, so what? You find that normal? You find that normal to have a woman walk into a nightclub and nurse a child? Who would you watch? Me or the nursing mother? Who would you watch? Kid was 14 years old. Who would you watch?
Joan Rivers from What Becomes a Semi-Legend Most. Happy birthday, Joan, and happy birthday, Luciano, although we don't have any of his comedy stylings. And now, let's go into World Weird Web. No, my engineer is shaking his head, because he's weird, and he's got webbed fingers, and I'm just going to vamp here for a little. I want to thank, by the way, my previous show that was on, not my previous show, WGBB's previous show, Entertainment Long Island with Don Lewis, featuring Eddie and the Moonshiners, which are Long Island's best-kept secret. His show is on every Sunday from 10 to 11 p.m. on WGBB, 1240 on your AM dial. If you don't know where it is, look at your radio right now, because it should be there. Anyway, this is the station that serves your community. And are we ready to serve up the World Weird Web? I don't think we are. So, yes, we are. Here's the World Weird Web. This is a segment I like to call World Weird Web, WWW, and it's basically devoted to cool, weird, wacky stuff that I've found or friends of mine have found on the internet that hopefully you guys will check out and have a good time with. I want to inaugurate this segment with something pretty extraordinary. It's www.shubi.com, and let me explain what this is all about. There's an independent radio station in New York that, for more than a decade, has been playing songs, if you can call them that, by a fellow named William Shubi Taylor. Actually, all they knew at one point was that his name was Shubi Taylor. It was a cassette that was handed down from a music studio and then passed around and duplicated, and luckily, thank goodness, it got into the hands of the folks at WFMU, and they played it, and a fellow named Erwin Schusid, who ran a show called Incorrect Music on that station for a couple of years. They finally just decided not to continue it anymore after about 4 or 5 years. But he basically promoted the music of this man, which is scat singing, but it isn't Ella Fitzgerald. It's not Nat King Cole or anything like that. This is a man who devised his own way of scat, which, well, it is so indescribable that all I'm going to do is play a cut of it. And it's unreleased music here. We got it off the web. And it's Tico Tico. You recognize the song, but you've never heard anything like this. So here is Shubby Taylor. William Shubby Taylor. Really, nothing quite like him. And the beautiful part of his story is, nobody knew who he was. Nobody knew how to contact him. There were reports that he was a postal worker or that he had died back in the early 1980s. And then the fellow who designed the Shubby.com website, in tribute to this man who recorded basically that we know of about a dozen songs where he would either be scatting over pre-recorded records, or at one point he had an organist do a couple of songs for him while he scatted to them. But he did some tracking down. He went looking for all the William Taylors in New Jersey and found Shubby, who is alive, not very well. He is in a retirement semi-nursing home in New Jersey. He's 73 years old, recently celebrating his birthday. But they had him on the air. He had a stroke a couple of years ago, but he still has some of the fire. He will not perform anymore, which is kind of sad. But he certainly left behind this legacy not only of the original tape, but they found bunches of other tapes of his that I guess are now being remastered and may eventually, hopefully, come out on CD. So that's William Shubby Taylor, and you can find out more about him and see pictures of him. Nobody had seen pictures of him in years and years and years. They're on www.shubby.com. Check it out on the World Weird Web. And I think you really should check Shubby out, because I know that song kind of gets a little repetitive, but every Shubby song is different in its own spectacular way. So do give that a look. But what we're going to look at now is something I'm so proud of. It's our first guest. I'm just so proud. I have Rabbi Saul Solomon with us, and I'm not even going to say anything about him. I'm just going to let his presence fill your radios with joy.
Mazel tov, mazel tov, kinder. Alle sein gesehen.
Congratulations! Shalom! Shalom uvracha! I'm Rabbi Saul Solomon from Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. A special hello to my congregation, the Couples Club, the Kiddush Club, the Staten Island Mortuary Club, and to all listeners of all faiths. First, I would like to say how grateful I am to David Lefkowitz for having me on to inaugurate his wonderful show. I think it's a great thing for Long Island, a great thing for the radio station. I'm still not sure if it's good for the Jews, but we'll see. I'm especially glad to be here on the first program because the timing is so auspicious. Just a week ago was the holiday Simchas Torah, where Jews celebrate receiving the Bible directly from God. All year, every week in the synagogue, Jews read a small section of the Torah, week by week, until they finish the whole book, all five books. Then, since the Jews are never satisfied with their accomplishments, they start all over again. And this is the week they begin again, from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He should have stopped right there, but no, he had to go and create the rest of it. So we had animals, and plant life, and mosquitoes, and Adam, and God help us, Eve, then Cain and Abel. Then Cain kills Abel, goes off to the land of Nod, and finds a wife, who must have been his sister, since the only other two people in the world at this point are his parents. Anyway, after that, everybody has a lot of kids. Jared begat Enoch, Enoch begat Methuselah, Methuselah begat Lamech, and told him, "Son, I've begotten more than you will ever know." And Abraham lived a clean life and lived 930 years. The famous Methuselah lived 987 years. And he smoked and ate fried foods. And then Noah was born. And that's the end of the chapter. So, what do we take from this story? What do we glean from it? Well, if you're a man, don't kill, don't sin, and when God tells you something, pay attention. And if you're a woman, don't talk to snakes, don't marry a brother, and don't play hard to beget. And speaking of women, as many of you might know, October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The sponsors of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, or as I like to call them, Boob Watch, estimate that this year, more than 200,000 new cases of breast cancer are expected to hit women in America. And it's my personal guess that 190,000 will be in Long Island alone. We're all living in a swamp. There are power lines inside our houses. Microwave ovens carry C-SPAN now. Damn it, children are being born with extra noses. So, if you're a woman living on Long Island, your boobs are ground zero. So let's get the firemen out of the damn building and prevent a nipple 9/11. Now, my wife, the lovely Rebetzin, was supposed to be here doing this segment, but this is her poker night. So, I'm going to have to pinch hit for her on this, or pinch tit, as it were. Now, October 18th is National Mammography Day. Go to your doctor, he'll do the machine, he'll squash you like latkes, and then you won't worry. Or, as I like to say, if you want nachas, smash your nachas. But aside from the mammograms, the American Cancer Society recommends that women examine their boobs once a month. If you have an unpredictable period, say an exclamation point, do the exam the same time every month. If you're pretty regular, do the test a couple of days after your period. If you're postmenopausal, you probably had dinner at 3 o'clock, went to sleep at 5, and you're not even listening. Okay, how to do a self-breast examination. I call it the cream of wheat maneuver because we're looking for lumps, changes, and thickenings. First things first, best way to do it is lying down or in the shower. In fact, that's the best way to do a lot of things, but today we're just going to do it standing up, listening to the radio. So, are you ready, ladies? Shirts off, bras off, girdles off, piercings out. If you can, face a mirror. Men, you can follow along at home or daven, whatever you want to do. Now, please, ladies, no cheating. You must examine your own boobs. If you're a woman and you're touching another woman's boobs, please stop. And send the Polaroids to me, Rabbi Saul Solomon, care of Dave's... No, I'm just teasing. All right, engineer, a little walk down memory lane music, if you please. Okay, raise your right hand in the air and wave it like you just don't care. Except you do care, because if there's a malignancy, you're screwed. Now, look in the mirror at your breasts. Are there two of them? If not, you probably already seen a doctor. If you have both... If you have both galangas, we move to step two. Hold your right hand up and use the fingers of your left hand, not the fingertips, the flat part, to circle and massage, working from the armpit down. Let's try that, shall we? This is fun! Now we're looking for any kind of irregularities, bumps, lumps, puckering. You also want to squeeze the nipples and look for a discharge.
with me together and squeeze. Squeeze the Yatrog. Squeeze, damn it. Squeeze. Good. Now, right hand down, left hand up, same as before, and rub. Rub. Feel the burn. Apply light pressure, then heavier pressure, then more pressure still, and squeeze. And squeeze. And squeeze the Yatrog. Squeeze. All right. Very good. Very good. Now, we're going to loosen up a little. We're just going to let them go, and we're going to shake them out a little bit. A little shaking out music, if you please. We're going to give them a good bounce. Yeah. Shake like a lulav in a hurricane. Very good. Now, if you found anything unusual in or on or around or under or over or next door to your boobs, please go to your doctor. Chances are more than likely it's benign. Of course, we'll have to do a horrible, painful biopsy to tell you this, but hey, for peace of mind, it's worth it. And men, although it's very rare, males can develop something called gynecomastia, a non-cancerous breast disease that still needs to be treated. Here's a little poem about it. There was a young rabbi from Brest who found a small lump in his chest. It turned out benign. In fact, he was fine, except for the trousers he missed. Well, I see by the old sandal on the console that it's time to turn things back over to Dave. I want to wish you all a terrific and healthy week. Be tolerant of your neighbors and be good to yourself. On behalf of myself, my dear wife Miriam Libby, and our children, Nehemiah, Josiah, Shloimi, Chana, Rivki, Yehuda, Moish, Yecheskel, Boruch, Avigdor, Yisrael, Hepzibah, Shaul, Aliza, Shimon, Gedaliah, Naftuli, and Fred, by my first marriage, this is Rabbi Saul Solomon saying, Shalom uvracha, from every one of me to every one of you.
Broadway, Off-Broadway, Cabaret. These are magical words conjuring up a universe of great entertainment. If you want to know everything about what's happening on the stages of New York, you need to get Performing Arts Insider magazine. For 60 years, Performing Arts Insider has been a bible of the industry. It tells you when shows are opening and closing, what they're about, who's in the cast, designers, writers, composers, contacts for producers and managers, box office info, parental guides, everything you need to know if you care about theater, opera, and dance too. As the chief editor of Backstage put it, Performing Arts Insider is who, what, where, and when. All the facts at your fingertips. For more information, how to subscribe or get a sample issue, call 516-295-1511 or go to www.totaltheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider.
Yeah, it's a wonderful magazine, Performing Arts Insider. We're back here on Dave's Gone By from 11 to 12 every week on Sundays, WGBB AM 1240. And I want to thank very much my special guest, Rabbi Saul Solomon. Remember, we'll give the address for hate mail later. But now, something a little more toned down, and it's our cultural segment, Dave's Gone Cultural. And we're going to be talking about some off-Broadway plays, but first, a book I read, a book that took me about 6 weeks to read, and I did try to read it rather quickly, but it was nearly 800 pages long, but I gobbled down pretty much every word of it. It's a book called Shaky, the pretty much authorized biography of Neil Young by Jimmy McDonough. Now, however long it took me to read the book, it took him 4 zillion times as long to write it himself. He pursued Neil Young and his management for about 2 years just to be able to get clearance to talk to Young and to do the book. And then he went after everything tooth and nail, and he came away with an amazing cross-section of Young's life, especially from the 50s up through the 90s. Of course, the most recent stuff is never going to be as interesting. The thing about his electric trains, or some of the most recent music, or some of the weird music that Young was doing album by album in the 1980s, where he was just leapfrogging across different kinds of music and not really making particularly interesting stuff in any genre. But boy,
when Young was doing the incredible stuff, like Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere, and After the Gold Rush and Harvest, up through the truly amazing times of Time Fades Away and, oh gosh, I am forgetting Tonight's the Night, certainly one of the greatest rock albums ever made. And boy, page after page of detail of just how messed up the band was, how these people could be so stoned and be so out of it on their feet, and yet make amazing music, music that was not slick, and yet fantastic rock and roll. And still, it's rather funny. Certainly there's a big section of the book about Danny Whitten and Bruce Berry. One is a musician and the other was a roadie, both of whom died from overdoses. And to hear them say that they weren't junkies until, well, then they went overboard and then they took too much and couldn't handle it, while all of them, everyone in the band, Young included, was just totally blitzed out, be it first on mostly pot and booze, and then later on when they were doing the On the Beach album, something called Honey Slides, which you can read about, and then towards the Rust Never Sleeps era, it was all cocaine. And Young, well, you know what, before I get to more of that about Neil Young, let's hear a piece of music by him that has not yet been on CD. One of the weird things is, there's six albums of his that he is not allowed to be released on CD yet. Here's a song from one of them.
When I was a young boy, my mama said to me, your dad is leaving home today. I think he's gone to stay. We packed up all our bags and drove out to Winnipeg. When we got to Winnipeg, I checked into school, I wore white bucks on my feet. When I learned the golden rule, the punches came fast and hard, lying on my back in the schoolyard. Oh,
Neil Young, Don't Be Denied, from the great and still unreleased on CD Time Fades Away album from Neil Young. And the book tries to explain why this man, who could make even more millions of dollars than he already has, hasn't released some of his greatest work on CD, including Time Fades Away, On the Beach, the rather lousy soundtrack album Journey Through the Past, plus some good stuff here and there on Reactor, Trans, and Hawks and Doves. It's just Young has to do things always his way. And sometimes it doesn't matter if that hurts other people or it doesn't even make any logical sense at all. It makes total sense in a weird way to him. And you get the feeling from the book that he's a good guy who does very selfish and alienating things just to maintain his sense of freedom. And I guess as long as he makes the music to back it up, we'll go with it. So I do recommend, quite highly, Shaky. You've got to kind of love rock and roll, certainly. You've got to love Neil Young, too, or else I'm sure it'll be a bit of a slog. But it gives an amazing picture of a certain kind of rock and roll, especially on the West Coast, and the whole lifestyle that even Cameron Crowe didn't quite give in his reportage. Anyway, moving on to some other reviews, some other things out there. Well, in my former life, and still current life, I'm basically a theater person. I've been a theater critic for well over a decade. I was a theater journalist for about 5 years at Playbill Online. And now, I am still a theater critic and still an inveterate theater goer, although I don't quite go as often as I used to. So I still see quite a few things, including the new Hot Ticket, Burn This, a revival of a Lanford Wilson play that I actually saw on Broadway when it opened. That'll date me back a little bit. The cast of the revival is Edward Norton playing Pale and Catherine Keener as Anna, with Ty Burrell and Dallas Roberts also in the show. Now understand, when I saw this originally on Broadway, John Malkovich and Joan Allen starred. Now, Malkovich was a force of nature. He came on that stage and the stage was on fire. Maybe he was singery chewing, but nobody does it like him. Problem was, it threw the play out of whack, because here's this guy, he's a real jerk. He's kind of dangerous and impossible and wild, or seemingly so. And here's this woman, she's a dancer, she's grieving for a gay roommate who was killed in an accident. She has this nice, very good, basically perfect boyfriend, and she falls in bed with this wild guy, and in the Malkovich version, you're just like, okay, this guy's fascinating, but what is she seeing him? In this version, you kind of see a little more of how those two could get together, because Edward Norton is a jokier, a little greasier, but a younger, cuter kind of Pale. That's the name of the character, Pale, based on very VSOP or VFOP. Anyway, the only problem is, when you don't have the stage on fire anymore, the play, which is a little over 3 hours long, really kind of drags a bit. It's not that interesting a romance. And what Lanford Wilson has tried to do is, he's got this whole melodramatic, comic, tragic love, well, not even tragic, but comic melodrama triangle going on. And then he's laying over that this tragedy of this dead roommate, who, by the way, this was written still when AIDS was very much in the public consciousness, but he left AIDS completely out of it. The roommate dies in a boating accident. So you can overlay the tragedy there, and everybody can sort of think, well, this is about losing a friend, except he couldn't be more than a friend to her because he was gay and she's not, and it just, the two overlays just don't fit. And yet, by the way, the show is now a big hit. Apparently it got this rave in the New York Times, and I just don't get it. It's certainly not a wasted evening, but it takes 3 hours not really to say anything. And for me, that's a bit of a problem. Anyway, I did mention that I don't go to the theater as much as I used to, but I was lucky this weekend. I did one of those triple-deckers that critics love to do. I saw a 2 o'clock matinee, a 5 o'clock mid-matinee, and an 8 o'clock show. Squeezed them all in, took cabs, took railroads, managed it rather well, I think. Opened the day with Little Ham, a musical based on Langston Hughes' play,
which is playing at the John Houseman Theater at 450 West 42nd Street. It's kind of a farcical plot, but there's always the borderline of something could go really, really wrong, because it's about all these people in Harlem trying to live their lives. They make a little money by running numbers, but then these white gangsters come in, and they want to control the town and basically be a bit violent. But it's really pretty comical all the way through. It actually gets more farcical in the second act than the first. Music is bouncy, pretty much standard jump and jive jazzy stuff. Best sequence is in the middle of Act 2, where the numbers runners, the nice guys, use an outlandish plot to outwit the gangsters. It's a fun show. I'm not overwhelmed by it, but the casting is pretty much spot on, and do watch for Andre Garner, who plays the title character, Little Ham. And then, total change of pace, ran downtown to a place called 45 Bleecker, which, conveniently enough, is located at 45 Bleecker Street, to see The Exonerated, which is words of actual death row inmates, later cleared by DNA, but only because they got better lawyers and law students from professors helping them out. Otherwise, these people would still be suffering in prison, or worse. One fellow, who was arrested 2.5 hours after finding both his parents dead with their throats cut, was branded a depraved homosexual, and what they did to him in prison shouldn't even happen to Jonathan Lindt. So, and remember, this guy was innocent. So all these people that were being played by people like Richard Dreyfuss and Joe Clayburgh and some other lesser-known actors are real. And it was a pretty powerful show, although these things which are read, they're just reading from scripts, kind of like the vagina monologues and other plays like that. So it gets a little tedious after a while, but when the show's over, at least at this particular performance, they brought up the real victims, the real people who spent all those years in prisons, and that was quite a moment. So that's recommended. Also recommended with a caution is something called The Odyssey, Belly of the Beast, which is playing at the Clark Studio Theater in the Lincoln Center Complex. This is a storyteller whose name is Odds Bodkin. I hope that's not his real name. And he's doing a series of storytelling nights, part of a series he calls Art of the Tale. So there's another night he does Halloween ghost stories, another he does things for the winter and Christmas and Hanukkah, another is for children, another is love stories. And all he does, he's got a guitar and a microphone and his own vocal sound effects. So I saw The Odyssey, which is quite effective, especially the Cyclops story where the monster has both human traits but also an evil monster side. And the way the Odysseus and the Greek soldiers get revenge and bust out of the cave, it definitely holds you. One big caveat, he really turns the microphone up quite loud. So it's a small theater, and there's no reason for it. He needs the mic to do some of the vocal sound effects, but it does not need to be that blaring. And it takes away some of the intimacy, and it also takes away just some of the pleasure of watching a storyteller work his craft. So I hope they tone that down for the rest of the run. And if they do, certainly The Odyssey is worth seeing, and probably some of his other stories are as well. Anyway, those are some of the things I've seen. Hopefully we'll be seeing more over the week ahead, and we'll tell you about them as well. If you're a big fan of Dave's Gone By, and I know I am, why not join the Bystanders, the official Dave's Gone By fan club? Because you can receive a bi-monthly newsletter devoted to the show, get a weekly special email, an autographed membership card, eligible for discounts on show merchandise and local businesses, receive a one-hour best-of audio tape, including favorite moments from the show, and maybe even some stuff we couldn't put on the radio. All this for just $10. For the newsletter, the discounts, the email, and the collector's item audio tape, it's a great deal. And if you join before December 31st, 2002, we'll throw in a signed picture of the host. Just make a $10 check or money order payable to Total Theater and send it to Total Theater Radio, P.O. Box 62, that's 62, Hewlett, New York, H-E-W-L-E-T-T, New York, 11557-0062. For more information about the fan club, email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. Well, I mentioned birthdays before this week. We had Joan Rivers and Luciano Pavarotti. We've also got, rather sad birthday, John Lennon. Would have been 62 on October 9th. He was born in 1940. And so we're going to play one of my favorite Lennon songs, the beautiful Across the Universe.
When words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Wind inside a letterbox, they tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Jackaroo days, oh, nothing's gonna change my world. Nothing's gonna change my world.
Nothing's going to change my world either. Well, hopefully not. John Lennon would have been 62, and actually it's the Beatles' song, Across the Universe. I want to thank you for listening this week to Dave's Gone By. First of all, also, I need to apologize. We didn't have time to do the Puff Sullivan letter. That has been rescheduled for next week. If you want a playlist for the music on this show, you can find that on our website, hometown.aol.com. /Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe. We'll be posting that tomorrow afternoon, so give us a few hours to get that up there. I'm going to give out a bunch of thank yous for making this show what it's been so far. Thank you to station manager Joey Alcarese, our wonderful engineer Paul, my assistant and wife Joyce Weil, and the kind wishes of all the friends and acquaintances who've sent me good luck letters and emails this past week. And of course, I want to thank all of you for listening. Please, let me know your thoughts by snail mail and by email, davesgoneby@aol.com. Please tune in next Sunday, same bat time, same bat station. Please have a great week, and don't miss it while it's going by. I'm David Lefkowitz. I want to wish you a good night, wish you a good morning, and gone by.
Remember that I ever felt the pain.
You've been listening to Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz on 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. Sweet things.